from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Coming up in our next hour of Forum, we speak in the first part of the hour to Bay Area author Michael David Lucas, whose first novel, The Oracle of Stamboul, which takes place in the Ottoman Empire in the late 19th century, has received a great deal of attention. Then at 10:30... Singer, songwriter, and producer John McRae of the Sacramento alternative rock group Cake will join us for the second half of the hour. Join us next after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Good morning and welcome to this morning's Forum program. In his first novel, Bay Area-based author Michael David Lucas takes us back to the 19th century Ottoman Empire, where a young girl becomes advisor to the Sultan and changes the course of history. He joins us for this Forum segment, and I ought to mention that last night we were together on stage at an event. I do all these library events throughout the Bay Area to support One Book, One Community, and done at San Mateo, Berkeley, San Francisco, and have done them at Marin for, well, going on 6 years, sponsored by Book Passage. They had Isabel Allende, Amy Tan, Michael Chabon, Dave Eggers, Abraham Verghese, and now, last night, Michael David Lucas. That's pretty august company to be in.
Yeah, I will always be happy to be in company like that.
Well, it was good sharing the stage with you last night, and there are a lot of people very enthusiastic about your book. I should mention, by the way, you used David in your middle name because you discovered that there's a Michael Lucas who is a porn star, a gay porn star.
He's actually a producer. He's one of the most sort of successful gay porn producers, and he spells his name L-U-C-A-S, and I spell my name L-U-K-A-S, but in spite of that, when I would put my name into Google and look for myself, he would always come up in the top two or three hits. And so, you know, I figured that I needed to distinguish myself from that other Michael Lucas. And
it's a smart thing. There's a Michael Krasny who's a billionaire. I need to distinguish myself from him. I like his bank account, but, you know, maybe I should call myself Michael J. Krasny. Let's talk about where this novel began. Kind of, you got this young girl in your mind and sort of tossing around in your head, and then you saw a photograph. Talk about how that whole thing began.
Yeah, so the sort of original seed for the novel came to me when I was in Tunisia. I was spending a year there after college, and I'd finished up one project and was starting on a new one, wanted to start a new one but didn't really have an idea for it. And so I was on a run through the outskirts of Tunis, and this image of a little girl playing backgammon with two older men just sort of came to me out of the blue, and I didn't know where she lived or when, but I knew that she was the protagonist of my new book. And so I sort of let her, you know, toss around for a while, move from place to place and time to time. She was in Cairo, and then she was in Damascus, 13th century, and then like the 17th century. And I just kind of got frustrated, and I put her at the back of my trunk and figured, if I didn't come up with sort of where she lived and when and those sort of basic details by the end of the summer, I would just abandon it and move on to something else. And so there's this long story that I told last night that involves me getting deported from Uzbekistan and sort of reflects.
As I said, you're the only person I know who's been deported from Uzbekistan. Yeah.
But the upshot of that is that I ended up in Istanbul with 10 days just to myself. And I had already been to the city and seen all the tourist attractions. And so I just kind of wandered around the city, checking out different neighborhoods. And it was probably the third or fourth day I was wandering around this neighborhood called Çukurcuma, which is where Orhan Pamuk's most recent novel, The Museum of Innocence, is set. And it's famous for its antique stores. And you know, there's these sort of big antique stores with grand Ottoman furniture. And then there's these smaller sort of almost closets that are filled with junk. And I was in one of the latter and sort of walking down the aisle past the brass coffee grinder and past the blue enamel teapot. And then at the back of the store was this crystal punch bowl with a stack of old photos in it. And at the top of the stack was a picture of a little girl who couldn't have been more than 7 or 8, just kind of leaning against a podium. She was standing on a chair. That's how small she was. But she had the most sort of wise and mature look in her eyes. And it sounds a little cheesy, but I feel like we made eye contact through the centuries. And in that moment, I realized where the book was going to be set and when. 19th century Istanbul.
There it was. But of course, you had to get to know her, and you had to. I mean, she's a prodigy. There are all kinds of extraordinary things that happened with her birth, which suggests the oracular nature of her gifts and the kind of prescience that she has and all that. But how'd you get to know her?
Through just spending a lot of time with her. It took about 7 years to write the novel, and I wrote about 7 drafts, and with each one, I threw out the previous one. And so, you know, there was something to the sort of spending that time with her and having her sort of change over the course of those 7 years. I really, you know, I really do believe that she existed in sort of an ideal form somewhere out there, and it was just a matter of sort of getting to know exactly.
You were the medium, in other words. You were sort of, I mean, did you ever feel that way, that you were kind of, channeling her?
I did. I think that there is that sort of mystical element to writing, but I wouldn't want to overshadow the sort of perspiration that goes into it.
7 drafts.
Yeah, there was a lot of
and 7 years. 7 years, yeah.
But, yeah, I do think that, you know, when I would get hit on a detail that seemed right, it seemed, you know, everything else would sort of disappear. And I would know that this is exactly what I had been searching for. And so there is a sort of mystical element, but a lot of digging.
A lot of beautiful writing, though. I mean, the excavating had turned up some gold as far as the language. You grew up in Berkeley.
Yes. Yes, I did.
I mean, not to say that those things are mutually exclusive or anything like that.
I think they are.
Went to Berkeley High?
I did.
Yeah.
Yeah.
From there to Brown?
Yes.
So when did you decide you wanted to be a novelist or a fiction writer?
Somewhere in between Berkeley High and Brown, I think. You know, I actually wanted to be a poet first. And I was, you know, in my late teens and feeling very angsty. And so poetry seemed like a really good medium to express that. And so the first classes I took at Brown, the first creative writing classes I took were poetry classes.
Did you have Michael Harper?
No, I unfortunately never got to take any classes with him. He only taught advanced classes. And so I was applying to the advanced classes over and over again and getting rejected over and over again. And finally decided, oh, you know, I'll go for my second choice, which is fiction. And it's worked out pretty well.
Yes, it has. The first novel, Oracle Istanbul, which has received a great deal of praise and has got a lot of attention to this young writer who spent a lot of time in the Middle East. I mean, you mentioned Tunisia and you were in Egypt and
Turkey.
Speak Arabic?
I speak Arabic pretty well. Yeah, yeah I've gotten a little rusty recently.
It's different Turkish that they speak today from what the Turkish that they spoke during the Ottoman period, though. I mean, it's almost like English. It's evolved into kind of a different language, hasn't it?
Yeah, definitely. And what's really interesting is that, you know, the written Turkish in the Ottoman period was written in Arabic script, and now Turkish is written in Roman script. And so it's very difficult for Turkish historians to study the Ottoman Empire, because it's written in a completely different script. And you know, it has all these different sort of words from Persian and whatnot. It's a sort of bright line between the Turkish past and the Turkish present.
Talking again with Michael David Lucas, his novel, The Oracle of Istanbul. I'm going to open the phone lines now. Some of you perhaps have read the novel. Indeed, you are free to join us with any questions or comments you might have, and we do welcome your phone calls. We're going to talk to him also about teaching creative writing to kids, which is what he does now, by the way, teaches 3rd and 4th graders. But we welcome your phone calls and would like to hear from you, and this is a half-hour segment, so if you've questions or comments, Join us now. It's toll-free, 866-733-6786, and we welcome your participation. And again, the toll-free number that's available to you is 866-733-6786. You can also email us, forum@kqed.org, and there are other ways to participate in the program besides calling and emailing. You can go to our website, kqed.org/forum, click on the segment, or go to our Facebook page. But we do certainly welcome your involvement. You know, last night we were talking about some of the influences on you, and you mentioned Günter Grass and Gabriel Garcia Marquez, a lot of the magical realists, so-called. I was talking about fairy tales, and we were talking about Roald Dahl and the Grimm fairy tales and all that. But, you know, it occurred to me that I'll bet a big influence on you was Charles Dickens.
Yeah, you are exactly right there. You know, one of the first adult books that I read when I was like 8 or 9 and sort of had these pretensions of being preternaturally intelligent, which were soon disproven, was Great Expectations. I took it off the shelf and I was like, oh, this looks like a great book. And I got about 2 pages in and didn't understand anything. But then came back to it later, and that and David Copperfield were really big influence
on the
Oracle.
I can see those. But then you've got all the elements of a kind of magical fairy tale here, too, because we've got a bad, evil stepmother, stowaway. I'm not going to do too many spoilers here, but a lot of the elements that just seem to be almost characteristic, really, of, say, fairy tales or archetypical mythic tales.
Yeah. I wanted the book to sort of be in between those two, the fairy tale and the sort of 19th century novel, and walk that line. Because I think there is something really magical about Dickens or Austen. You know, the way that the protagonist moves through their lives, it seems almost ordained in a way that a fairy tale sort of has the same story logic as a fairy tale.
Like the deterministic
Yeah.
Yeah. I think we have a caller who might surprise you here from Seattle. Good morning, Adam.
Hi, this is Adam.
Hey, Mike. Hi, Adam. How's it going?
So I think maybe the first time a brother has called in on a show.
How's it going? I've been meaning to call you back.
I'm with all my graduate student friends. We're in the EpiLab listening to you.
You're a younger brother, Adam?
I'm a younger brother.
Uh-huh. And so you must have a good deal of pride?
Very proud of my older brother.
Are you also a fledgling or aspiring writer?
Science writer. I'm actually a budding epidemiologist.
Oh, very good. And so you're University of Washington, where are you?
Right, exactly, University of Washington.
Uh-huh. So what do you think about your brother's success? Suffice aside from your pride in it.
I think it's really amazing. I think, you know, he's traveled extensively. He knows so much about the Arab world, about the Middle East, and he just has such a grace with his writing, and it's really an inspiration to be his younger brother.
Well, it's good of you to
call. And his novel is amazing.
Yeah. It's beautiful writing, as I've said on a couple of occasions. It's poetic writing. You know,
it really is. And we traveled in Turkey for 3 weeks together, so I got to kind of be with him while he was thinking about you know, the different themes and characters in his book.
Well, it's good of you to call. We appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks so much.
You. Thank you for that. And let me get another caller on. Is this any member of the Lucas family? Neil, hi, you're on.
No, I'm not a member of the Lucas family, but I simply wanted to know, what other novels about Turkey or Turks inspired you, or can you recommend? Did you ever read anything by Eric Ambler?
I've never read anything by Eric Ambler. Orhan Pamuk's a big inspiration. Orhan Pamuk.
He's a Nobel Prize laureate. In fact, we interviewed him on Forum when he was living here in the United States.
Oh.
There's a woman
and not very popular with a lot of Turks.
Not popular with the Turks, but a really brilliant writer. Elif Shafak.
Not popular also because he brings up the genocide.
Yeah.
Armenian genocide.
He sort of, you know, yeah, he speaks this taboo. You know, there's like 3 or 4 taboos that you can't talk about in Turkey, and one of them is the Armenian genocide. And yeah, he speaks very sort of boldly about it, and I think he should be commended for that. But it makes him very unpopular. And Elif Shafak, too, a Turkish writer.
We also had her on Forum.
Yeah, she's great, and she also, you know, she also sort of brings up that issue, but for some reason she's still very popular in Turkey, and Orhan Pamuk is not.
Good suggestions, Neil. Thank you for the call. What do you think about what's going on in Tunisia now? Some reflections on that, particularly since it seems to be one of the Arab Spring, the initial Arab Spring, really, but one of the ones that's had some success, at least.
Yeah, I mean, first of all, I should say that I had no idea that this was sort of brewing, this revolutionary sort of a democratic feeling was brewing in the country. It was a very repressive place when I was there. I remember one time walking down the street with a friend and, you know, Tunisia at the time was covered with posters of Ben Ali, the president. And, you know, there's posters of him wearing his like traditional Muslim garb. There's posters of him in a suit, you know, or you know, with military people. And then there was one poster of him that I saw that I'd never seen before where he's, I think he was like skiing or something. And I pointed it out to this
skiing
guy.
Skiing in Dubai? You can do that. You
know, I don't know. Dubai. Yeah. But probably in the Alps or something. But I pointed it out and the guy I was with sort of just went shh and said, we don't talk about that in the street. We don't even mention the president in the street. And so, you know, just to go from not even talking about the president to, you know, overthrowing him in 2 weeks was phenomenal. And I think, you know, I think Tunisia and Egypt and all these other countries, you know, they've had oppressive regimes for so long and they have not sort of had democracy in any real way. And so I think that it's going to take a number of years to work things through, and the sort of judgments that are coming now, I think are a bit too, I mean, they're important, but I think they're a bit too early.
Any judgments, I think, are premature because we really don't know where any of this is going. And they're all individual cases. I mean, you can't speak sweepingly about Tunisia, Egypt, Dubai, I almost said Dubai again, Bahrain, you know, all together, or Syria, obviously. They're all very different cases. Let's talk about your work with kids. Very invigorating. Third, fourth graders writing, doing creative writing, mainly fiction?
Yep, mainly fiction. It's an after-school program called Take My Word for It, and it's only once a week. I don't want to sort of pretend to be a classroom teacher because I have so much, you know, respect for the hard work they do. But it is really that 1 hour a week is very invigorating to me. I used to think that it was that the children had sort of bigger imaginations than we do, but now I think it's that they have smaller internal editors. They will have an idea and they'll just kind of go with it. Like I was telling you last night, there's one student who is writing a novel, a very short novel, about a chicken who is born in Tokyo and is throughout the novel fulfilling his fate to become teriyaki chicken in Oakland at a sushi restaurant. And his name is soon to be Teriyaki Chicken. And I, you know, not that that would make a great adult novel, but I think that if I thought of that as an idea, I would immediately say no. And he immediately just said yes.
He convinced you.
Yeah, he convinced me. I think it works.
Let me get a caller on here. And that's you, Ricardo.
Hello, Michael Krasny and Michael Lucas, Michael David Lucas. Good morning to you both. I'm calling to find out something that you had mentioned. I have a question on the drafts. The amount of drafts you took upon yourself in this book were 6 and 7 years to complete it. What I'm looking for is what solidified the gold, the last draft that brought you to put this into print. What do you think it was?
Well, I think I really tricked myself in a way. When I'm writing, if I think I'm working on the final draft, I'll never allow myself to go forward. You know, I'll get stuck on, is this sentence perfect? Is this paragraph perfect? And so what I said to myself is, this is the second to last draft. And that allowed me a sort of freedom to you know, move forward and to not be particularly, you know, tough with myself.
You're working on a novel now. Are you working any faster? You think you're going to work without taking 7 years?
I think those first 3 years were sort of about learning to write.
Journeyman.
Yeah. Journeyman. And so now I'm writing pretty much full time. And I know a little bit more about writing novels than I knew before. So I think this one will take me about 4 years. I'm hoping to be done with it in about a year.
Let me thank the caller. And another question about novel writing from Anne in Berkeley. Hi, Anne.
Hi. I'm a career counselor, and I have a number of aspiring young clients who want to be writers, and there's always that issue of finances. I'm wondering how this young man managed to spend 7 years writing and exploring and being in the Midwest and Mideast, and how did he finance that, if he doesn't mind my asking?
No, not at all. I think it's a really important question and too often gets overlooked. The first 2 years I was in a MFA program at the University of Maryland and so had a graduate assistantship. The next year I was supported by the great taxpayers of the United States on a Fulbright scholarship in Turkey. The year after that, I worked at a nonprofit and then I'm getting the years mixed up here. But then I moved to the Midwest, actually, to be with my partner who is finishing up her orals at the University of Wisconsin. And I had a grant from the Elizabeth George Foundation, the mystery writer. She gives grants to first-time novelists who are finishing up their books. And so that and a little bit of grant writing allowed me to sort of make
it
through.
Pastiche piecemeal economics, though.
Very much so. Very much so.
I think there's your response, Ann, and thank you for the call. And we'll go to San Jose and welcome Timothy. Hi.
Yes, I was wondering your experience in Turkey for that period of time you were there, the reports of a rising Muslim radicalism in Turkey. Have you noticed that in any way, and is it aligned more toward the Sunni branch of Islam or the Shia branch of Islam?
Well, most of the Muslims in Turkey are Sunni, but I would characterize it more as rising Muslim conservatism. The ruling party in Turkey, the AK party, is actually very much like the Republican Party in the United States, which is not a dig at either one, but it's a party of people from the center of the country who are mostly sort of traditional and conservative in their outlook and have a sort of free market outlook on the world. And so, you know, there are pockets of radicalism in Turkey, but I think that the ruling party is very much a sort of right-center conservative party.
And Timothy, we thank you for the call. You're going to have to, now that you're writing another novel and it's centered on Egypt, you're going to have to go back to Egypt?
I'm hoping to go back in the fall. Yeah, I'm really looking forward to it.
And that would be like for how long?
I'm thinking, you know, I also want to go to Cambridge because part of my novel sort of revolves around some documents that are in Cambridge, England. And so probably maybe a week in Cambridge and 2 weeks in Cairo, just to sort of get a taste of the place again so I can reinvigorate myself for the next draft.
And then might be wondering, how are you going to fund that trip?
I don't know if there's any generous listeners out there who want to contribute.
Well, you've got a novel that's doing well, and congratulations on it. Debut novel, The Oracle of Istanbul by Michael David Lucas. Good to have you on Forum.
It's great to be on. Thank you.
And we're going to a break, but when we come back, we're going to meet the lead singer of Cake, which is an alternative rock group. So stay tuned. Music coming up. In fact, we'll have a live performance here in studio for you. Find out all about Cake, which is was born in Sacramento. This is all local here in this hour, local talent. You're listening to Forum on KQED. I'm Michael Krasny.